People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to pee. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fort that keeps. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, fighting in the fork of Jackie. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, if you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Oh, yeah. I was listening to the BBC this morning on their Africa report, and the current thug in head, who's president of Zimbabwe, which used to be Rhodesia, a country that 40 years of black power have utterly ruined, used to be the breadbasket of Central Africa when it was ruled primarily by the whites under Ian Smith. It was a massive exporter of food. Most of the white farms were stolen by the previous president Mugabe, white farmers driven out. Agricultural production plummeted, and Zimbabwe is now a basket case with huge inflation. Anyway, what is the current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, doing? Well, he's got a bright idea. He's going to rename a number of major thoroughfares in the two largest cities of Zimbabwe, namely what used to be Salisbury, now Harare, and Bulawayo, after himself. That's right. Or after other people, important people. For instance, there's going to be a Fidel Castro way. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? An Oliver Tambo way. Oliver Tambo was a communist who was president of South Africa for a term or two some years back. Now, granted, streets can be named and renamed and so on. Of course, it's a good example that when demographic power, demographics change, political power changes, and that's what's happened in Zimbabwe. So it's perhaps not surprising that they will rename streets, and then, of course, the current thug wants them renamed after himself or people he admires. Oh, yes, it's going to be a Leonid Brezhnev Boulevard. One might ask, well, why that? Well, Brezhnev, when he was, of course, the president of Russia in the late 70s. He was responsible for considerable funding of an army, the communist guerrilla movements in Rhodesia. But as several Rhodesian critics have said, and these are black, what does this do for our economy? All of this is vanity. It may stroke the ego of the president, make him feel even more of a big shot. But what does it do for people that can't put bread on the table, who don't have jobs, in a country where there's scarcely enough money even to keep the hospitals open? And of course, changing the name of a street isn't quite as simple as just saying this will henceforth be known as whatever, Emerson Mnangagwa Parkway, or as the case might be. Of course, signs have to be changed inside. I mean, all that costs money, which could many people in this poor, in this wretched country feel would be much better spent on things like hospitals or employment. I want to thank Bill down in Pennsylvania for sending this my way. Another stinky story of sad America dominated by the dollar shekel usury system. Minor league baseball is prospering like no other business in North America. Wish we had factories instead. The message from our rulers, shut it down, knock it back. It employs too many white people, and others too, and makes blue-collar white people happy. It's like the beer, the Brack Festival of DOD-based closing some years back. Only many bases were drained on America, eating up tax dollars. Minor league baseball doesn't hurt anybody, and white people pony up for it. No porn, no homos, no cross-dressers, all male teams, and tickets are affordable. America positive, totally self-sustaining. Can't have that now, can we? And Bill says, I have little use for the House of Representatives, but even those evil creatures don't want to construct or kill minor league baseball. This is a story on that theme. Congress urges Major League Baseball to scrap minor league overhaul in a bipartisan letter. Major League Baseball's proposal to eliminate 42 minor league baseball teams by 2021 has met with strong opposition from those within the baseball community. Now over 100 members of Congress have collectively expressed opposition after sending a letter to Major League Baseball Commissioner Bob Manfred that blasts the proposal and urges the league to scrap its planned overhaul. Congress sends a disapproving letter to Major League Baseball. On Tuesday, 104 members of the House of Representatives signed a letter expressing their firm opposition to Major League Baseball's proposed restructuring of the minor leagues. The letter included signatures from both sides of the political aisle. Quote, if enacted, it would undermine the health of the minor league system that undergirds talent development and encourages fan loyalty, the letter read, and this is courtesy of Sports Business. It would particularly be felt in areas far from major league teams or where tickets to a major league game are cost prohibitive. At a time when Democrats and Republicans in Congress can't seem to agree on anything, it's clear they are united on this front. And the letter explains why. Congress is opposed to the proposal. It also makes clear that if the proposal goes through, Major League Baseball risks losing its support on future legislative initiatives. The letter says, in part, the abandonment of minor league clubs by Major League Baseball would devastate our communities. Their bond purchasers and other stakeholders affected by the potential loss of these clubs. We want you to fully understand the impact that this could have on the communities we represent. but also on the long-term support that Congress has always afforded our national pastime on a wide variety of legislative initiatives. For over a century, Congress has taken numerous actions specifically designed to protect, preserve, and sustain the system and structure of both major and minor league baseball to flourish. The letter is certain to get Major League Baseball's attention. Now we want to see if the league is prepared to back off. Initial reports stated that Major League Baseball was targeting teams with stadium facilities that were well below the level they'd like. While many believe the league could do more to help minor league teams improve their facilities and increase players' salaries, the league seems determined to go the other way by eliminating them altogether. I won't give you the list, the full list of the teams, because I think it's probably too local, too specific. But as Bill notes, this is just another attack by the part of certain globalist elements on white heritage, especially on white working class people who are already suffering, despite the good measures brought in by Donald Trump and some alleviation, are already suffering economically and have for several decades because of the internationalists. And the issue I dealt with several times over the past week about the firing of Don Cherry, the popular populist commentator for Coach's Corner on Hockey Night in Canada, had been for 37 years because of a comment he made urging immigrants to show respect by wearing the poppy, spending a few bucks, as he said, to wear the poppy to honor the veterans who had helped create the country that they'd come to, that they'd wanted to come to. And for that, he was fired by the globalists, the cultural Marxists, and of course the collective corporate cowards. And he was a hero to many white working class Canadians and others too. This is part of our culture under attack. And of course, at every turn, everybody else's culture is attacked. Is being promoted. I'll be very curious if my local bank will have any recognition of, dare we gag it out? Dare we even say the C word? No, not that four-letter word you might be thinking of. Christmas, there I said it. Yes, the local bank, at least my Toronto Dominion Bank, spent a whole month propagandizing for Gay Pride Month, and it probably said that it funds over 160 some LGBTQ projects and funds 67 or supports 67 gay pride parades in Canada. And I asked the manager, well, can I expect, something around Christmas time, like Merry Christmas? No, not season's greetings or happy holidays. Something that recognizes the religious, first of all, and for those that are not especially religious, the cultural celebration of the overwhelming majority of Canadians, the absolutely overwhelming majority of whites, and considerable numbers of non-white minorities as well. Christmas. Well, I'm almost certain that once again we will not. There is an attack on our culture. Well, here's a story out of the Guardian in England, and the story is: white nationalists are openly operating on Facebook. The company won't act. Well, I hope they won't. That's good. They certainly purged a number of people earlier. Guardian analysis finds that VDare, that's run by my good friend Peter Brimelow, and Red Ice TV with Lana Lochteff, etc., among several outlets that are still on the platform despite Facebook's promised ban. On November the 7th, Lana Lochteff, an American white nationalist, introduced a thought criminal and political prisoner and friend as a featured guest on her internet talk show, Red Ice TV. For about 90 minutes, Lochteff and her guest, Greg Johnson, whom I know, a prominent white nationalist and editor of the White Nationalist editor-in-chief of the White Nationalist publisher Countercurrents, discussed Johnson's recent arrest in Norway amid authorities' concerns about his past expressions of respect for far-right mass murderer Anders Breivik. In 2012, Johnson wrote that he was angered by Breivik's crimes because he feared they would harm the cause of white nationalism, but he discovered a strange new respect for him during his trial. It's possible to say, and I've said this about the Christchurch Manifesto, I agreed with it. Well, okay, I agreed with the lengthy analysis of the mortal danger Europeans face of massive organized invasion by the Third World. Organized not by the Third World, incidentally. Organized by the traitors in our midst, the white-hating, Christian-hating George Soros and many others of his ilk, Angela Merkel, Justin Trudeau in Canada, much of the U.S. Democratic Party, etc., etc. So it's possible to say, I agree with the guy's ideas, I don't agree with what he did. Just a few weeks earlier, Red Ice TV had suffered a serious setback when it was permanently banned from YouTube for repeated violations of its policy against hate speech. Forget about hate speech. YouTube has banned thousands of people for free speech. And hate speech, of course, is really just an accusation that tells you more about the accuser than it does about the accused. When, in this case, Red Ice TV is accused of hate speech, we're not at all able to know what it was they said that was wrong. What it is that YouTube or the dark forces behind it hate that speech. Anyway, but Red Ice TV still has a home on Facebook, allowing the channel's 90,000 followers to stream the discussion on Facebook Watch, the platform Zuckerberg launched as a place to share an experience and bring people together who care about the same things. You know, that was the purpose. The conversation wasn't a unique occurrence. Facebook promised to ban white nationalist content from its platform in March, reversing a years-long policy to tolerate the ideology. The Red Ice TV is just one of several white nationalist outlets that remain active on the platform today. A Guardian analysis found long-standing Facebook pages for VDare, a white nationalist website focused on opposition to immigration. The Affirmative Right, a rebranding of Richard Spencer's blog Alternative Right, which helped launch the alt-right movement. And the American Free Press, a newsletter founded by white supremacist, that was white nationalist, Mr. Willis Carter, I knew him very well. Willis worked with many people who were not white, blacks, Asians, Arabs, in addition to multiple pages associated with Red Ice TV. Also operating openly on the platform are two Holocaust denial organizations, the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, or CODO, and the Institute for Historical Review. Just look at what is being said. Also operating openly on the platforms are two Holocaust denial organizations, and then they list them. Well, so what? And why can you not question the so-called Holocaust, which is not a historical fact, it's a religion. Now, that may seem contradictory, but the minute you get to any of the so-called details, you know, of the tale called the Holocaust, you run into problems, or you run into factual problems.
And I don't want to digress to making this a discussion of that right at this moment. But just for an example, the numbers. Now, the numbers have changed over the years. Initially, after World War II, we were told there were 11 million Jews died.
Well, that was almost as many Jews as there were in the whole world. And then the survivors kept crawling out of the woodwork demanding reparations. So Germany has paid reparations to far more than 6 million people.
I know. Let's not be too adamant about the math. All right. Well, then it was 7 million. Okay. And then it was 6 million. And finally, when the religion kind of consolidated in the 1970s with the TV drama The Holocaust, it became a religion. And 6 million was one of the doctrines. The National Socialists killed 6 million Jews and not a single person fewer. So if you, say, want to get at that figure and say, well, I've got some problems with that. Well, that's Holocaust denial. You see, you can't even question, and it is very questionable for a number of reasons. The best authority for the number of people who died in the detention camps was the Red Cross, because the International Red Cross had access to all these camps. Now, you don't have to believe the German figures. What did the Red Cross say? Well, right after the war, the Red Cross estimated that something in the neighborhood of 275,000 Jews died of all causes in the detention camps. Now, that would include people who died of old age, who died of illness, and there was typhus, particularly in the last few months of the war, swept through these camps with high concentrations of people. Food was very, very scarce, both for the civilian population in Germany by that point and for the detainees, and disease spread, no doubt about it. But the figure was about 275,000 Jews. Now, there would have been other Jews killed who were partisans in actions on the Eastern Front. That may have added a few tens of thousands more. And if you want to point that out and say, well, I have a problem with that, You're simply dismissed as a Holocaust denier. No, I just don't want to sign on to a religion that makes nonsense. That's nonsense. I mean, you can believe what you want. if it was your religion, I don't have a problem with that. The mischievous thing, though, is the Holocaust. It is not primarily a religion for Jews, although most believe in it. It's a religion for us. And for our elites. You can mock Christianity all you want, and you're not going to get into trouble. With our elites today, if you, I don't say mock even, question the so-called Holocaust religion, you can go to jail in some countries. Like political prisoner Alfred Schaefer, who's in a German jail now, probably for close to 5 years, for having made videos rejecting the new religion of Holocaust. His sister Monica Schaefer, a Canadian, was flung into a German jail and kept for 10 months for the same crime. Well, for her crime was making a video in which she said, "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust." So, this is a religion enforced in many countries by our rulers. And it's a religion meant to control us, to fill us with guilt, with irrational guilt. And this is the reason I oppose it. I mean, I don't care what people want to believe for their own religion. Just keep me out of it. Don't ask that I believe it. Or don't ask that I accord it some great respect. I mean, you can believe what you want. Last night, for instance, at my meeting, I had a man who fervently was arguing with all sorts of explanations I couldn't even really understand that the earth was flat. Well,
He's perfectly entitled to his views. I don't have to follow them. But anyway, that's a bit of a digression away from the fact that there are still some white nationalist groups on Facebook, and some that even question the new religion of Holocaust. Well, why shouldn't there be?
Why shouldn't these people, these groups, have the right to explain their point of view and gather supporters and probably get people who disagree with them?
Quote, there's no question that every single one of these groups is white, and white nationalist group, said Heidi Barish, the director. Well, actually, she's the former director. She quit of the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence project after reviewing the Guardian's findings. It's not even up for debate. There's really no excuse for not removing that material. You see, Heidi's a big old censor. That's what she is, that big old big girl. Now, you know, words don't seem to mean anything. She says, there's no question that every single one of those groups is a white nationalist group. Committee for an Open Debate on the Holocaust has nothing to do with race or white nationalism. The Institute for Historical Review also has nothing to do with white nationalism, open borders, or anything like that. It is about history. White nationalists support the establishment of whites-only nation states, both by excluding non-white immigrants and in some cases by expelling or killing non-white citizens and residents. Now, this is an insane explanation of groups like VDEV, for instance, or Red Eyes TV. They have never said that they want to kill non-white citizens and residents. This is beyond propaganda. This is just a lie. Not all the groups, incidentally, support the establishment of whites-only nations. I, for instance, am a white nationalist. What I want to do is return Canada to something like the 95-5 formula that my good friend Dr. James Sears, who's also a political prisoner, advocates. I'll tell you what 95 and 5 means. The 95% of our population would be founding settler people, European and or Native people. You know, they were here. I won't get into first, but they were certainly here when Europeans returned in the 1540s to Canada. Okay, so 95% will be that. There have been non-whites, other than Native people, here for over 100 years. Some of them have put down roots. So there's a place for them, certainly in my vision. But they will have to shrink back to about 5% of the population from the current 22%, which can be done primarily through basically shutting off further immigration to non-white people until we reestablish the balance. In fact, we really don't need any immigration at all right now. But that's the fact. But notice how the Guardian, which is a left-wing paper, sets up a complete straw man that some white nationalist groups even want to kill non-white citizens and residents. I don't know anybody who says that. And certainly not any of the groups mentioned. Many contemporary proponents of white nationalism fixate on conspiracy theories about demographic change and consider racial or ethnic diversity to be an act of genocide against the white race. It is. Many fixate on conspiracy theories about demographic change. Well, there's no conspiracy theory about that. Is our demography changing? Yeah, it is. In 1960, when John F. Kennedy was elected President of the United States was 90% white, or the European founding settler people of the United States constituted 90% of the population. Almost all the remaining 10% were black. That was the racial makeup of the United States. Right now, whites are about 61% of the United States population. There's been a demographic change in the intervening 60 years. This is no conspiracy theory. This is just the numbers. Similarly, in Canada, at our centennial in 1967, you know, roughly the same time as JFK's inaugural, we were about 99.5% white, the European founding settler people and the native people. We are now only 78% European, 28% now from the third world. The major, our two largest cities in English Canada, Vancouver and Toronto, are now a majority non-white.
Now, this isn't a conspiracy theory. These are the numbers. Now, this isn't, you know, I saw Elvis at the McDonald's restaurant in Tallahassee 2 weeks ago. No, this isn't a conspiracy theory or nonsense. This is true. So many contemporary proponents of white nationalism fixate on conspiracy theories about demographic change. Well, they're not theories. That's the fact. And consider racial or ethnic diversity to be acts of genocide.
Yes, well, enforced diversity is all about replacement. And as I mentioned many times before, but something you know you really have to have ingrained in your head. When you hear diversity with your city or your employer or some other institution embraces diversity, what it means is it doesn't want you around anymore. It certainly doesn't want your children. If an institution embraces diversity, it wants fewer white people, and particularly fewer white Christian males.
Facebook declined to take action against any of the pages identified by The Guardian. A company spokesperson said, "We are investigating to determine whether any of these groups violate our policies against organized hate. We regularly review organizations," blah, 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 blah. A spokesman also said that Facebook does not ban Holocaust denial, but does work to reduce the spread of such content by limiting the distribution of posts and preventing Holocaust denying groups and pages from appearing in algorithmic recommendations. So it's just control and censorship in another fashion. You know, let's be very clear about who is censoring whom. The Guardian undertook a review of white nationalist outlets on Facebook amid a debate over the company's decision to include Breitbart News in Facebook News, a news section of its mobile app dedicated to high-quality journalism. Facebook has faced significant pressure to reduce the distribution of misinformation on its platform. Critics of Breitbart News object to its inclusion in what Zuckerberg has described as a trusted source. And there's much more in this article. This month, the Southern Poverty Law Center and numerous news organizations have reported on a cache of emails between the senior Trump advisor Stephen Miller and the former Breitbart writer Katie McHugh, showing how Miller pushed for coverage and inclusion of white nationalist ideas in the publication.
No, oh my gosh, no. Well, why not?
One of the objections to the fake news media is that so much of it is simply utterly slanted propaganda, like this article itself. Why shouldn't there be other points of view? Why shouldn't the views of white nationalists be heard so people will actually know what they say, not what The Guardian says they say? For instance, you might find out if you follow VDARE, and please do that, VDARE.com, VDARE. They're not talking about massacring non-whites. This isn't in the cards. This isn't what they're talking about.
The email show Miller directing Hugh McHugh to read links from VDARE and other white nationalist publications, American Renaissance, among other sources. In one case reported by NBC News, Breitbart ran an anti-immigration op-ed submitted by Miller under the byline of Breitbart News. Oh no, oh really? Oh, isn't that terrible?
Breitbart is a funnel through which V-Dare's ideas get out to the public, said Heidi Beirich. It's basically a conduit of conspiracy theory and racism into the conservative movement. We don't list them as a hate group, but to consider them trusted news source is pandering at best. You know, what so much of this is all about, really, is is getting information to people and control of information. And up until the popularization of the internet beginning in the mid-1990s, the globalists, the radical left, the anti-whites, particularly the major Jewish interests, had pretty much control of most of the major print and broadcast media. Very significant Jewish control in the United States and Canada. And many ideas were simply kept out. Yes, there were a few rebel, very tiny newspapers, local newspapers, special circulation papers like The Truth at Last by Dr. Ed Fields and what would become the American Free Press, that earlier had been the Spotlight. But they were small circulation. And there was some talk radio. But it was only with the coming of the internet that it was possible to circumvent the very significant control and censorship of the mass media. And this has been a battle ever since, with an effort by the various control freaks to get the control back. This is in many ways what the argument is all about. And one of the things that's really helped in this is that the Donald Trump has repeatedly hammered the lies of the mainstream press. He, in fact, rally after rally, he points to the men and women in the front rows as you people from the press. You lie, you lie, you lie, and they do. As I pointed out in this article from The Guardian, it is just a plain lie and inflammatory bogeyman that they hold forth. When they say that white nationalists, some want to massacre non-whites in our countries, that's the sort of detail that would stick in most readers' minds. Much of the other verbiage might not, but that's pretty dramatic. It's pretty inflammatory, but not true. That's, you know, the most inflammatory so-called fact just isn't true. And that's the way much of the media has been. And it's only with the opening up of the internet that other voices can get heard. The Guardian article continues, one of the challenges for Facebook is that white nationalists and white supremacist groups adopt the trappings of news outlets or publications to disseminate their views, said Joan Donovan, the director of technology and social change research project at Harvard, and an expert on media manipulation. I wonder if she is. Red Ice TV is a group that sells itself as a news organization when they are primarily a political organization and the politics are staunchly white supremacist, says Donovan. Now, she's an expert on media manipulation. Well, she's also an expert on bullshit. Many of the guests, of the guests I know of who've been on Red Ice TV, none is a white supremacist. See, that's just a term of abuse. You will usually allow a person to self-identify. Ask a person, well, you know, what are your politics? Or how would you describe yourself? I do not know many people. I'll virtually say I know virtually nobody in the current political generation that would say, I'm a white supremacist. Because white supremacy would seem to connote that you want to dominate other races. You're an imperialist, in other words. You want to go to other countries and rule over them. That would be my definition of a white supremacist. Most of the people I know are isolationists. We don't want to go to war in other countries, except to defend ourselves or our own interests. Not interested in a peacekeeping mission in Burkina Faso, for heaven's sakes, which is what Canada's now involved in. No, not interested in pushing our civilization on others. I wanted, though, to protect our territory. I'm not a supremacist, I'm a nationalist. And most of the people I know, like Jared Taylor, Peter Brimelow, that's where they fit. What else does Donovan have to say? We have seen this happen in the past, where organizations like the Ku Klux Klan have produced their own newspapers. It doesn't mean that it qualifies as news. Oh, just because it's not the sort of news you'd like to hear. You see, this is where those in control like to exercise their control by trying to exclude others. You can't have a newspaper because, well, you're in the Ku Klux Klan. Oh, why can't you have a newspaper? Newspapers, there's the mischievous suggestion that somehow newspapers carry real news, except propaganda. Well, you know, if you believe that, you are a touchingly trusting person. Most newspapers have a point of view. Most newspapers slant material to promote that point of view. And to protect that point of view, and exclude information that tends to challenge that point of view. That's the way it is. There's nothing particularly unusual about that. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I've been playing this fellow a lot lately, and I think I don't see any reason to change. This is a great Hank Williams medley by another great entertainer who's sadly left us, and that's Boxcar Willie. And this is his tribute to the late Hank Williams, as soon as I can get rid of this ad here.
I'm going to do you a little medley of a Hank Williams song. If you hear one you like, you tell me about it, okay? I tried so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. The more I learn to care for you, the more we drift apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? Yo! Take these chains from my heart and set me free. Be as fair to my heart as you can be. Then if you no longer care, all the love that's beating there, take these chains from my heart and set me free. I bet you remember this one. If you love me half as much as I love you, you wouldn't worry me half as much as you do. I know that I could never be this blue. If you only loved me half as much as I love you.
company I passed you on the street. And my heart fell at your feet. I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. Somebody else stood by your side, and he looked so satisfied. I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. Now everybody knows this one. Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you.
Countries around the world, ladies and gentlemen, and I've never been anywhere yet, no matter what language they spoke, if somebody didn't know this next song of Hank Williams. Here's the song that made his name famous all around our world. I got a feeling called a blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Beautiful dream. I hate to think it all over. I lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Lord, I'm nobody's sugar daddy now, and I'm low on some. I got the lovesick blues. Well, we couldn't quit singing Hank Williams songs unless we did the first one that he ever put on record. Do y'all know what the first song he ever put out was? Goes like this. Came in last night at 10:30, that baby of mine, she wouldn't let me in, so move it on over. Shove it on over. Move over, big dog, cause I need a dog moving in. Well, she warned me once and she warned me twice, but I don't take no one's advice, so move it on. Hold it on over. Move over, little old, cause the big dog moving in. Move over, hot dog, cause the cold dog moving in.
That was Boxcar Willie. Here's Grandpa Jones, another great performer.
And for me, and it brings back a lot of memories, I'll guarantee you that. And we're also making some new memories at the Ryman Auditorium with a visit tonight from Hank Williams III.
Well, actually, somehow that is managed to get away from us. Let's see if we can't get somebody else. Here we are. And this is a Willie Nelson and Judy Carter and Anita Carter.
The Kate Smith Evening Hour. Presented by new Wonder Sudsing Babble.
You know, folks, I've got a little sister, and, well, she's kind of bashful, but she's awful struck on the way Hank Williams sang some pretty little love songs, and the last time I seen her, she was over yonder on a bunch of straw, singing one of them herself. Little Anita Carter's my sister. It's like we're going to hear from her, maybe. Today I passed you on the street, and my heart fell at your feet. I can't help it, I'm still in love with you.
Somebody else
and Anita Carter. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here, there being many great country and western duets, and here's one I had not heard before, but a couple of songs by a man who died all too young and all too tragically, Hawkshaw Hawkins, in an airplane crash, and I believe it was 1959. And this is... Well, I don't know what to...
Bashful Brother Oswald!
This is... we're having our troubles here. Get here. This is the Country Show with June Carter and Hawkshaw Hawkins.
Oh, welcome to the Country Show, Country Show, Country. Never really had me there. She's got me feeling blue, but I know my baby loves me.
Get Hawkshaw Hawkins here.
Thank you just a whole lot and a great big welcome, friends and neighbors, to our little country shindig down here in the old barn in Nashville, Tennessee, in beautiful Tennessee, I should say. We're so proud to get to pay you one more little visit like this. We hope you will enjoy the show we have lined up for you. Frankly, I feel sure that you will, because we have some great talent on our show that I'm sure you're going to enjoy. Right now, without further ado, let's keep moving right along here and introduce one of my favorite little girlfriends, the country music world's favorite little sweetheart, Miss June Carter.
You're glad to see you, June, bud.
Here at Hederook. I'm poor.
See, there
I'm poor.
My goodness.
Oh, you'll never get
there.
I've had such a bad wreck.
No,
you'll
never get. Well, now, what kind of a bad wreck?
I'm telling you what, it was really a wreck, and you'll never believe it, Ernest Tubb, but you know what? You know how I've always liked that old Marlon Brando, don't you?
Yeah, I sure
He's been banging on my door. He's been banging on my door for the past hour and a half.
Banging on your door?
Yeah, he's banging and clawing away at my door, buddy, and I never opened it. I didn't, buddy.
You never opened it?
Sir,
why now? June, why wouldn't you open the door for Marlon Brando?
What for? Make an animal close it?
No.
I'm getting
Junie, by the way, speaking of big, strong.
Well, very interesting dialogue from yesteryear. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.